There are certain kinds of buildings that always reflect their original identity and purpose. No matter how long it's been since they were used for that, no matter what's happening in them now, you can still tell what they were built to be. A Pizza Hut building is always a Pizza Hut building, regardless of what restaurant or office suite or retailer has moved in, regardless of whether that distinctive roof is still painted red. It's indisputably a Pizza Hut building. You can still find old Howard Johnson Motor Lodge and restaurant buildings sitting near freeway exits today, with their distinctive A-frame offices now repainted for whatever local motel or diner has opened up in the space. And right here in the Lehigh Valley, a pizza mini chain called Big Woody's has repurposed multiple old Hollywood video stores in both Allentown and Bethlehem by just incorporating the old store's logo and part of the name in their new facade. In fact, they didn't even get rid of the searchlight images that we associate with movie premieres that were part of Hollywood Video's branding. Church buildings, of course, are like that as well. Church buildings that are no longer being used for church services and ministries have been turned into all kinds of things, everything from apartment buildings to art galleries to nightclubs across the country. But with few exceptions, you can always tell that it was designed and built to be a church, no matter how it's being used now. I remember one of the members of my previous congregation, Madison Avenue Presbyterian Church in New York City, telling the story of standing outside the entrance to that church's sanctuary on Madison Avenue one day as the evening was approaching. She was on her way to a church committee meeting but had stopped outside to finish a work call on her cell phone. And as she stood there half listening to people on her conference call droning on, she noticed two pedestrians walking by when one stopped for a moment and looked up at the sanctuary entrance. The other looked back at him impatiently, wondering why it stopped. And the first one said, by way of explanation, "I wonder what that building is now that it's not a church." Problem, of course, was that the building was still very much in use as a church. The church member looked up at the sanctuary herself in puzzlement, but also with new attentiveness, and realized that it did, in fact, look run down, even closed up. It had these huge wooden doors into the sanctuary that were locked tightly shut at the top of a steep, weather-beaten stone staircase. Their tiny little windows were almost black with accumulated grime from years coming off of the city streets there, and no lights were visible. The church member went into a committee meeting, told the other people what had happened, and that began a conversation that ultimately resulted in a major capital campaign to do a complete gut renovation of the sanctuary. And about 7 years later, they did another campaign to renovate the rest of the buildings, which looked better, but were actually in worse shape. In some cases, the original 1916 plumbing and electrical wiring was still being used. Replacing plumbing and wiring systems and putting in new sprinklers was not nearly as satisfying as renovating the sanctuary, but it was in many ways more important and necessary. Our architects told us that any day could bring a catastrophic fire or flood because of the state of the building. But you couldn't see the difference in all that work and all that money the same way you could in renovating the sanctuary. That is, except for the pool. That's right, the pool. Have you ever heard of a church having its own swimming pool? Gyms are a dime a dozen in churches, but swimming pools? I've since come across a few other examples of this, but they're pretty rare, and I'd never heard of such a thing before I was called to serve there. See, that church basically has two buildings, a sanctuary and a church house, as they called it, which is the space for all the offices and programs, and because it's in Manhattan, the church house goes up, not out. It's a 12-story building that was built very intentionally on the model of urban YMCAs. It had, in its origins, it had two gymnasiums with locker rooms. It had dorm space for people who were intended to function as a sort of combination of social workers and program directors. It had a bowling alley, a rec room, and a swimming pool. The senior pastor at the time the building was built had been very involved in the YMCA when it was an overtly Christian movement dedicated to improving one's physical, mental, social, and spiritual well-being. And it had a particular concern for those in poor communities who didn't usually have the resources to attend to many of those things, especially the physical and social dimensions. The pastor felt that the church as a whole, and Madison Avenue Church in particular, should have a similar holistic focus on the well-being of its neighbors. And in particular, the burgeoning immigrant communities that were just a few blocks east of the church, literally on the other side of the train tracks that run under Park Avenue. And he wanted the new church house to reflect that commitment. Now, unlike churches, swimming pools are a central feature of YMCA buildings. They have them to promote physical health, friendly competition, recreation, and personal safety, because it's dangerous not to know how to swim. And that problem was and remains common among urban children. That's why Madison Avenue Church had a swimming pool. And it was used to great effect for decades to accomplish exactly that mission shared by the YMCAs. But by the time we were talking about the building renovations in the mid to late 2000s, the pool hadn't been used that way for decades. It hadn't even been used for decades. The problem was that the poor immigrant communities that the church had served a few blocks to the east were systematically displaced after World War II with what we would now call gentrification. Wealthier people coming in, displacing those tenants who had to go to other parts of the city that they could afford. So the pool went from a major tool for outreach and service to neighbors in need to a recreational space for the largely wealthy families who belonged to that neighborhood and the congregation. After a few decades, even they stopped using it as newer and fancier pools were built in the neighborhood. And with very few people using it and the cost of maintaining it and insuring it and staffing it with lifeguards rising dramatically, this church decided to close it down and drained it. And it stayed that way for a couple of decades until the renovation plan was being developed. And that's when the debate began. Because there were a group of leaders who wanted to restore and reopen the pool as part of the renovations. They talked about how their family had all learned to swim there, sometimes through multiple generations, how they'd built important relationships with people in the process. They talked about how it could help attract people to the church again, just as it had before. They talked about how it was part of the identity of the congregation since the building was built. And then on the other hand, there was people saying it was just too expensive to restore it and we should just make it a storage room, which is what it had already become. You'd be surprised how much you can store in a swimming pool. After weeks and really months of this debate going back and forth, something unexpected happened. An elder emailed me the very passage from 1 Corinthians that Don read earlier this morning, just a few minutes ago. She had been one of the advocates for preserving and restoring the pool. And she had told the story repeatedly about how her children had learned to swim there and how much they enjoyed coming to the church before because of that and how much she hoped that for her grandchildren and so on. But the email said something very different. She said, "This was my devotional reading the other day and I can't get it out of my head, even though I'm trying, because I don't like what it says. You are God's building, it says." We talk a lot about the buildings being God's house, but this says that the congregation is God's building, not the church house. That means all of this that we're doing shouldn't be about preserving a building. It shouldn't even be about having a building. It's about being a building, God's building. And what God tells us about how to be is to love our neighbors as ourselves. And so our actual building has to help us do that. And I'm realizing that the swimming pool just won't help us do that anymore. "I don't know what will," she said. "But this passage says that God's Spirit dwells in us as God's temple, as God's building. It says the present and the future belong to us. And we belong to Christ, and Christ belongs to God. So if that's the case, then we need to listen to Christ, to God's Spirit in us. And I think it will tell us how we can use this space to love our neighbors in the present and in the future. It's one of the most extraordinary emails I've ever gotten in ministry. And she was right. And soon after that, in the midst of the familiar back and forth in a meeting debate over the pool, she asked an important question. Why had we built a pool in the first place? And that led the group to remember the story about the YMCA parallel, and people were taken anew by the fact that the pool was originally meant to serve people in the neighborhood, especially people who were poor, not for the congregation's internal use. And finally, somebody asks, well, who's in our neighborhood now that we need to serve? And can this help us do that? And the answer came pretty quickly. The population of people who were homeless in the neighborhood was significantly increasing because the city had been cutting back its funding for shelters, which had become so overcrowded and dangerous that many people preferred to risk sleeping out on the streets. And that started a conversation that ended with a series of unanimous votes to tear out the swimming pool and replace it with a gracious, purpose-built, two-story, because the pool was deep, homeless shelter that could be operated 7 days a week and run by volunteers in the church. It became one of the defining ministries of outreach for the congregation, serving neighbors in need just as the pool had been created to do. Except this time in coordination with other faith communities doing similar services through an organization literally called the Neighborhood Coalition for Shelter. There are certain kinds of buildings that always reflect their original identity and purpose. And that is true of the church as God's building above all. I don't mean the facilities. I mean the congregation of people called together in a particular place and built up on the foundation of Jesus Christ to be God's building, a dwelling place for the Spirit of God and a presence of loving service to neighbors as a sign of God's love for them and the whole world. So the congregation's facilities are an important and powerful resource to help the people of the congregation be God's building. But it's the congregation in its life and ministry and character and care for its neighbors that is God's building. That is what we've built up to do. That's what we are being built up to be. Some of that work is done by inviting our neighbors into the facilities to serve them and to work with them to serve others. And some of that work is done by going from our facilities out to where our neighbors are. But in either case, it's we who are together God's building as we work with and for our neighbors wherever they are. So as we, as God's building here in this place and time, continue to explore what it means to be a neighborhood church, let's rededicate ourselves to being God's building here in Bethlehem, knowing that buildings can and should transform to serve and partner with neighbors in new ways, even as they not only retain what they were meant to be, but do so more faithfully and effectively. Let's use the resources we have, including these facilities, so that people will look and say, wow, I wonder what this community would be like if that church wasn't here. And let us live into Paul's promise that all things, including the present and the future, belong to us as we belong to Christ and Christ belongs to God. And we can trust that that will be more than enough of a foundation to build on and be built on as long as time lasts. In the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit, amen.